well, what happened to Osama bin Laden was hiding sort of in plain sight. The man who claims that he killed Osama bin Laden, Robert O'Neill, did an interview, a long interview in Esquire in 2013, in which he described what bin Laden's face looked like after he shot him three times in the face and forehead. And there it is, without using the word canoe, he describes this gruesome scene of splitting the top of his skull open into a V, the negative space in the shape of a V, and his brain matter exposed. And one of the points that I make in the story is that SEAL Team 6 then branded Osama bin Laden. That was, it's an act of dominance, and it is a form of sport, and it's reflexive. And it doesn't, in this case, it does not necessarily mean that Robert O'Neill committed a war crime, but there is no question that the ritualistic manner in which, and the frequency in which it occurred, and the fact that it had no military necessity, was criminal.
You believe that bin Laden was killed unarmed and in the dark?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that my story presents fairly conclusively is that the order from the beginning was to kill him regardless of the situation inside. And in fact, one of my sources who was a senior member said, kill him, bring the body back. That was the order.
We're going to do part two of this conversation, post online at democracynow.org. Matthew Cole will link to your piece at The Intercept. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of First 100 Days, United in Resistance. First 100 Days is a resource to support creative resistance to the Trump regime and takes place January 14th and 15th at the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art. There will be workshops on preparing for protests, interrupting oppression, creative protest tactics, and more, with the goal of strengthening our communities by channeling outrage into dynamic projects based on a deeper analysis of anti-colonial, anti-capitalist, anti-racist, and feminist histories. Again, that's First 100 Days, January 14th and 15th, at the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art, 415 Southwest 10th Avenue, Suite 300 in Portland. More information on the event can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Inner Boy Workshop at the Portland Underground Grad School on Saturday, January 14th. Marking the first anniversary of David Bowie's death, they'll look at illuminating moments in his career for inspiration to break through creative blocks and make work that shatters convention. Bowie's intense energy flowed into any media available, from page to song, stage to film, to canvas. What source did he tap? Join them and find your inner Bowie. Again, that's Saturday, January 14th, at Southeast Uplift, 3534 Southeast Main Street. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Turn on the thin white tube, throwing darts in lovers' eyes.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503-230-2300.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. My name is Abe Proctor. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. My erstwhile co-host, Joe Uris, is not with us today, so it's just going to be you and me for the next hour. This is KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. You can also find us on the internet at kboo.fm. If you haven't poked around the website, that's something I encourage you to do, not least because there is a little button that says Donate Now. And if you're not a member of KBOO, if you haven't taken the opportunity to support this station, any time is a good time for that. Your support is how we stay on the air. It's that simple. This is not a pledge drive. I just like to throw that out from time to time because, you know, it's important. Staying on the air is important. I'm going to say that unequivocally. Good morning. Kind of have a novel approach to today's show. This really isn't something that we've tried to do on this program before. That said, on this program, we try to set a higher bar than you might find on your typical political talk radio show. And I think that's true of all the shows, all the talk radio shows here are here on KBOO. There is a higher level of commitment to intellectual rigor and to proper English pronunciation than you'll find a lot of places on the dial. In short, we try to say things that are true, and we try to debunk things that are not, and we try to use empirical evidence, reality as we commonly understand it, to confront the issues that confront us as a city, as a nation, as a race of people upon this globe. So what I want to talk about this week is has to do with a topic that became a hot button issue towards the end of the the recent presidential campaign. That is this notion of fake news. Fake news is exactly what it sounds like. It's something that's packaged as news, that's distributed along a number of vectors to reach the voting public. In this day and age, that largely consists of social media platforms like Facebook, like Twitter. It looks like news, it smells like news, it reads like news, but it ain't news, it's fake news. Case in point, back in October, there was a fake news story that made its way around the internet that Pope Francis had endorsed Donald Trump. It, of course, was not true. The Pope, typically, does not choose to give his blessing, as it were, to any particular political candidate in any particular campaign in any particular country in the world, not least of which candidates for president of the United States. It wasn't true, but a lot of people saw it and believed that it was true. This was fake news. Now, it's hard to look at any specific fake news story out there and conclude that it had enough influence, for example, to switch the outcome or shift the outcome of the election. That's hard to say. It's hard to say if anybody or enough people believing falsely that Pope Francis had endorsed Donald Trump was enough to deliver the presidency to Trump. Probably not. But I think it's also safe to say that on balance, the preponderance of fake news has a measurable effect on the perceptions of the electorate. So I thought for today's show, it'd be interesting to take an item that has been circulating on the internet, mostly on social media platforms lately, and see if it's actually true. Now, this is something that caught my mind because I saw it the first time on the Facebook page of somebody whose opinions I respect, someone whose intelligence I respect, and someone who has a broad enough and deep enough awareness of the world that they were unlikely to post something on the internet that wasn't true. So I thought if this person put it on his Facebook page, then there was a good chance that it was true. But then I began to see this show up in other places too, verbatim. This was a cut and paste sort of thing. In fact, it even had instructions at the end to copy and paste the post into your own social media page so as to spread the word a little more wisely. So this caught my eye for a number of reasons I think that will be apparent to you in a moment when I read it. Now, why is this important, you might be wondering? Are we not already discriminating news consumers because we are tuned into KBOO? I think the answer to that is largely yes. But the preponderance of news sources, excuse me, available now is both a blessing and a curse. And this is what I mean by that. It's a blessing because we have things like Democracy Now!, for example, that is a reliable source of good journalism. If you hear something on Democracy Now!, chances are almost entirely the case that what you're hearing is true. Democracy Now! Has the added bonus of bringing to the minds of citizens those stories that have been overlooked by the for-profit mainstream media. So there's two good reasons to listen to Democracy Now! First, it's almost always true. Secondly, you're often hearing something that either has not been addressed by the mainstream news or has been not given the serious treatment that it deserves. So we have this preponderance of media sources. Sometimes this is a good thing. Other times it is not. What do I mean by that? There's a lot of sources on the internet that play to our deeply held sense of political identity, our deeply held assumptions about how the world works, and our, in often cases, deeply held beliefs about how certain people behave, usually people who don't belong to our particular political tribe. In other words, news sources that reinforce our beliefs and that excite our fears. That reinforce our beliefs and excite our fears. If you want to see a textbook example of what I'm talking about, go to your television, turn on Fox News, watch it for an hour, and you will see exactly what I mean about so-called journalism that reinforces beliefs and excites fears. That is their stock in trade. Whether or not the news reporting that's going on now has any particular relation to reality is a different question entirely. So to get back to this post on my friend's Facebook page, I saw it and I read it and it reinforced my beliefs and it excited my fears as a liberal. As I said before, the person who put this out there was someone whose opinions and judgment I trust. So I was inclined to believe, first of all, that this posting was true. And secondly, it reinforced my beliefs and excited my fears. So I was ideologically predisposed to think it was true. The thing that brought me up short was, despite the bold assertions that it made, despite the fact that it was showing up all over the place, it was entirely unattributed. None of the claims that were made in this post were sourced in any way. So what I did for the purposes of today's program is I went through and fact-checked all the claims that this post made to see if perhaps that we on the left were being hit with an incidence of fake news that made us feel better, that reinforced our previously held beliefs and excited the fears that we all harbor about what conservatives in power are up to, particularly this new crowd that is about to assume power in Washington. So without further ado, I'm going to read to you this post, and then we're going to go through these things one by one. And as we do, I'm very interested to hear your feedback, not only on the topics we're going to address here, but the notion of fake news itself, the implications of the plethora of news sources that are out there, and whether or not this preponderance of information is on balance a helpful thing to the body politic or a detrimental thing to the body politic. And finally, what we as members of the Portland community and supporters of KBOO can do about it. So here we go. Here is the item that led me to believe we might be looking at a piece of fake news. Here's how it goes. This was the Federal Week in Review. And if you want to read this thing, you can. Just Google, this was the Federal Week in Review. It has shown up on blogs and on Facebook and Twitter posts and all over the place. Not too hard to find. This was the Federal Week in Review. One, Trump fires all ambassadors and special envoys, ordering them out by Inauguration Day. Two, House brings back the Holman Rule, allowing them to reduce an individual civil service, SES positions, or political appointee salary to $1, effectively firing them by amendment to any piece of legislation. We now know why they wanted names and positions of people in energy and state. 3, Senate schedules 6 simultaneous hearings on cabinet nominees and triple books those hearings with Trump's first press conference in months, and an Affordable Care Act budget vote, effectively preventing any concentrated coverage or protest. 4, the House GOP expressly forbids the Congressional Budget Office from reporting or tracking any costs related to the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. 5, Trump continues to throw the intelligence community under the bus to protect Putin, despite the growing mountain of evidence that the Russians deliberately interfered in our election. 6, Trump breaks a central campaign promise to make Mexico pay for the wall by asking Congress, in other words, us, the taxpayers, to pay for it. 7, Trump threatens Toyota over a new plant that was never coming to the United States, nor will take jobs out of the United States. 8, House passes the RAINS Act, giving them veto power over any rules enacted by any federal agency or department. For example, the FDA or EPA bans a drug or pesticide. Congress can overrule based on lobbyists, not science. If we don't like that endangered species designation, Congress kills it. We, progressive, liberal, libertarian, and conservative, need to all wake up to what is actually happening to our country. Copy and paste this entire post into your own status update instead of sharing. More of your friends will see it. Now, if you're a progressive and you're fearful over what the Trump administration might bring to the country, this is raw meat for you. This confirms everything that you are afraid of. This confirms every belief you have about the darker desires of conservatives once they get their hands on the reins of power. This says to you, yes, everything I thought was true is true. The only part of that's wrong with this is, as I mentioned, there's no sources of any kind. This is just thrown out there, presented as fact, and expected to be accepted as fact. Now, what obligation do we have as distinguishing consumers when confronted with something like this? And that's a question I want to dig into a little bit further. First, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program, KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. If you'd like to call and be part of this conversation, I encourage you to do so. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also drop us a line if you would like at the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. And you can also write us on Twitter at HonestAbe72. So as I mentioned, I went through this piece of information one item at a time in an attempt to verify whether or not it was actually true, in an attempt to establish whether or not this was useful information, whether or not this had some relationship with reality, or whether this was a piece of propaganda designed to inflame our beliefs and excite our fears as progressives. So here's what I found out, one item at a time. 1, Trump fires all ambassadors and special envoys, ordering them out by Inauguration Day. It turns out this is true. Reuters reports that all of Obama's diplomatic appointees have been ordered to vacate their posts by Inauguration Day. Now, in the grand scheme of things, this might not be that big of a deal, but it certainly is a departure from precedent. Typically, when a new administration comes into office, it's going to make its own appointments in the world of international diplomacy. Some appointees who may have done a good job or have shown a particular aptitude or good reservoir of good judgment, they're allowed to stay at their posts. But in almost any case, in almost every case, somebody who's being replaced doesn't have to vacate their position right away. There's usually a grace period given, let's say, to an ambassador in some country, someplace, who might have school-age children who need to finish out the school year, who might have projects or engagements brewing, loose ends that they need to tie up. There's generally not a hard and fast schedule kept here. For whatever reason, that's not what Trump is doing. Every ambassador, every diplomat, everybody appointed by President Obama has been served notice that they've got to be out by Inauguration Day. So item 1 turns out to be true. Item 2, House brings back the Holman rule, allowing them to reduce an individual civil service, an SES position, or a political appointee salary to $1. Now, as you might imagine, this essentially allows Congress at their whim to fire any federal employee they deem should be fired. It's just that simple. Not technically being fired, they're just having their salary reduced to $1. But if you've ever tried to live on $1 a year, you're probably going to have to go find another job. And that's what the Holman rule would do. Now, this sounds pretty nefarious. This sounds pretty bad. This sounds like perhaps even an upset in the separation of powers, the setup under the Constitution. It turns out that this is true. The Holman rule's been around for a long time. It hasn't been invoked in quite some time. But during the recent caucus voting that went on in the House, this is where both caucuses, the majority Republicans and minority Democrats, get together. And in the case of the majority, vote on things like the rules that will dictate how the House is to be run over the next session of Congress. This happens every time there's a new session of Congress. Most of the time, the rules stay more or less the same. Sometimes there are small changes at the margins. Sometimes there are pretty significant changes with pretty far-reaching consequences. And it turns out that the Holman rule has, in fact, been revived under the rules package just voted on by the House Republicans. Lawmakers can now slash the pay of an individual federal worker to $1 a year at their whim. Now, I don't think I need to explain in too much detail how devastating this could be for any number of domestic spending programs that do critical work on everything from the environment to combating homelessness to combating poverty to finding people jobs to educating our young people and on and on and on and on. All Congress has to do is decide to slash one worker's salary or an entire office full of workers' salaries to $1 a year, effectively killing whatever program they happen to work for and effectively firing everybody who used to work for that program. That's pretty devastating. And it's true. So far, our piece of possibly fake news is two for two. Let's go to the phones. Who do we have? Francis, good morning.
Hi. I also saw that, and something about it, I had the same reaction. And as you're going through it, you're saying that these statements are true, because the first one, I wonder, now you're saying he gave notice, but it says he fired all of these people, right?
Yeah, they said your job's over as soon as I take office. Yeah.
Does he at this point in time have the authority to do that?
I probably technically know he doesn't. But, you know, he will have that authority as soon as he assumes office.
And he has made that statement?
His team has made it clear that these people are expected to have vacated their posts by the time he takes office.
So they have the authority to do that now, even though they're not in office yet?
That's a good question. I would say they have the de facto authority to do it. I'm sure that these people, these diplomatic appointees, are probably going to do what they need to do to be out of there by the time the next president takes office, whether or not he has the technical authority to do this or not.
Because it would seem that at this point in time, he's not the president.
No.
His administration is not in power yet.
No.
So they have no authority to tell any of these people anything.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement, yes. But nevertheless...
So this is something that they're saying that they may do or they will do. To me, the way it was presented is like it's been done.
That's the way it was presented. You're absolutely right.
Okay. And what concerns me about this notion of fake news, which I know I've seen a lot of it, mm-hmm. is that they're now discussing the possibility of having some kind of persons or panels or whatever to go through the quote-unquote news and decide what's real and what is not. And that, to me, would end up, it's almost like censoring. What my concern is that real news will be called fake news.
Exactly.
The real truth will be dismissed as fake.
Yep.
And that, in certain venues, that has been a problem as it is already, that when people speak the truth, they're dismissed as conspiracy theorists or whatever.
Yep.
And this is just going to promote that even further.
And yes, I agree. And a big part of the problem, too, is it reduces any particular question not to an evaluation of fact or an examination of reality, but simply to two differing opinions.
Right. And
the notion of objective truth is lost in all of this.
Right. And what is concerning me, and it happens not just on Fox News, but on MSNBC, CNN, there's a sensationalism that is just out of this world in every realm, including the quote-unquote liberal press, where they exaggerate everything, and everything is presented in terms of conflict and dissent. It's very, it's all about promoting conflict and disagreement. Yeah. And this whole thing about the Russians, what I've discovered is that some of the things that Trump says may be true, but it's presented in such a way, in such a sensational manner, that no one believes it. And so the truth is really being muddled by everyone. It's almost like the media isn't really concerned about now what the truth is. It's more about what the reaction is and what the response is and what people will do if this happens or that happens or that doesn't happen.
Or they're more concerned with what will drive eyeballs to screens and will drive mouse clicks to websites and ultimately boost the bottom line.
Right. Which is the same as the news media now. I mean, it's all about what makes the news. That's how Trump's platform was presented in the first place.
I agree.
Every morning on that Morning Joe show, they talked to Trump or talked about his Twitters, and every word out of everybody's mouth was Trump. But the truth doesn't go away, you know. And part of this whole thing right now is the ugliness. The real ugliness of this country is right out there in the middle of the street right now, and we can see it. And how to address it is very the dilemma right now, because we've allowed the subtleties, the Congress that refused to even have a hearing for the Supreme Court nominee that was made almost a year ago, and that they got away with that.
Yeah.
That it was okay and considered all right by everyone in the media. That no one questioned it, really. That it was an okay thing to do. You know, it seems that our democratic process has been eroded long before this election.
I would agree with you on that statement, Francis, but with regard to the Supreme Court nomination that was effectively stolen from Barack Obama, I encountered quite a bit of reporting noting how unprecedented that was. But true, I think the Republicans in Congress just didn't seem to care.
Right, and that's the thing right there. How is it that that was possible? How is it that that obstructionist, racist action was allowed to continue in our country, in our Congress? There's something that's already broken there.
I would absolutely agree. I think the people, those Republicans in Congress who followed that course, I think believed that they would pay no political price for it. And so far, they're absolutely right. They have paid absolutely no price for denying a president his constitutional prerogative.
And further than that, it was obstructionist to the extreme. And you know, when a person such as Ted Cruz campaigns on the platform that he's going to shut down the government, to me that's a treasonous statement.
Agreed.
But who's enforcing the law there? Nobody.
Nobody, and there's no political consequences. Ted Cruz is still a U.S. senator.
Right.
Yeah. Listen, Francis, I'm going to have to give some others a chance.
Right, you take care.
I really appreciate your call. Thank you.
For the discussion. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, we've got a number of items on this list yet to get through. We've got some people wanting to join the conversation. So let's press on. Item number three, the Senate schedules 6 simultaneous hearings on cabinet nominees and triple books those hearings with Trump's first press conference in months and an Affordable Care Act budget vote, effectively preventing any concentrated coverage or protest. As it turns out, that is also true as far as it goes. There are indeed 6 cabinet confirmation hearings taking place tomorrow. Trump's first press conference since the development of the written word is also taking place tomorrow. But we don't know for sure if this is part of an effort to deflect coverage away from any one thing. It's certainly possible. It's certainly not outside the realm of belief that the Trump team would orchestrate these events to all happen in concert such that the need to scrutinize or the opportunity to scrutinize any one of them in detail is lost. I suspect that most of the attention will be placed on whatever it is his orangeness says in front of the cameras, because that's usually sensational, if not actually newsworthy. So that's, as I mentioned, true as far as it goes. So far, our possibly fake news story is true. 3 items out of 3 so far. Let's go back to the phones. John, good morning.
Good morning. I'm going to give you a piece of real news that sounds fake coming from Al Jazeera. Didn't Hillary denounce Al Jazeera?
I don't know.
Al Jazeera TV, I was overlooking my... roommate was watching an interview on Al Jazeera English of Noam Chomsky.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the subject was about Donald Trump. That's why I mixed up. Anyway, at the beginning of the interview, they recounted something that Noam Chomsky did way back in 2010. He predicted someone like Donald Trump coming into power. And
really?
Predicted it very accurately. So it was almost like a prophet. It was so accurate.
And that was you found that reported on Al Jazeera.
Yeah, and I didn't get to see the whole interview. I'm going to rewatch it, but it was a really, really good interview.
Mm-hmm. Al Jazeera's English language branch or bureau is one of the best sources out there for. If you really want to get a handle on what's happening in the Middle East and the greater Muslim world, that you really can't do much better. Despite the extent to which it's been demonized in this country as the propaganda arm of terrorist organizations, I think it takes just a little bit of watching to see that that's not the case. So appreciate you bringing that to our attention.
Yeah. Sometimes it seems like the U.S. is using 1984 and Brave New World as a playbook.
Yeah, it does feel like that, doesn't it?
Yep. You have a great day.
You do the same.
Thanks.
Ugh. Okay, pressing on. 3 for 3 in our possibly fake news analysis today. Item number 4. House GOP expressly forbids the Congressional Budget Office from reporting or tracking any costs related to the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. Now, this is what really raised my eyebrows when I first came across this post. The stuff we've talked about so far, is pretty pernicious. Is pretty nasty as it goes, but sort of falls within the realm of garden variety conservative nastiness when it comes to throwing their weight around from positions of power. But this really made me sit up, because if it's true, that's pretty jaw-dropping. The Congressional Budget Office is an independent, nonpartisan organization that exists to provide objective economic analysis of the measures either proposed or adopted by Congress. And they do a brilliant job in this regard. And they're one of the most important, balancing mechanisms, analytical mechanisms within the larger lawmaking process to help ensure that laws that are passed by Congress are fiscally sane and that we all have a good grasp of the economic scope of any particular piece of legislation. The Congressional Budget Office, it's a good thing. We need it as part of any rational lawmaking process. So if the House GOP is instructing the Congressional Budget Office that that it is not allowed to track any of the costs that may result from the abolition of Obamacare, that's like a slap in the face to reality. That's like going into a bar saying, hey, reality, how's it going? Sitting down and then smacking them across the face. So this essentially allows, if Obamacare is repealed, and every signal indicates that that's going to happen, possibly a little later than we had originally thought, but is probably going to happen, that it's going to do so in sort of some economic and fiscal dream world. We're not actually going to be able to talk about the real world financial consequences of its repeal because the Congressional Budget Office would have been instructed not to do that math. Well, we don't like that math, so we're just not going to do that math because we are the Republicans and that's how we work. So if this one turned out to be true, that's astonishing. So this is what led me to believe, I don't know if this is true. There's no attributions to this post. There's no sourcing to this post. This might be fake news, I said to myself. It turns out it's true. In that same rules package that the GOP caucus voted on that I talked about a few minutes ago, one of the new rules of business in the upcoming Congress is that the CBO is not going to be able to track any costs related to the repeal of Obamacare. We're just not going to do that math, ladies and gentlemen. It is true. Now, maybe you don't geek out on this stuff quite to the extent that I do. Maybe you don't find blatant denials of reality to be as fascinating as I do. But to me, this is breathtaking in its implications. They hate that piece of legislation so much. And really, by extension, they hate their fellow Americans so much that they're simply going to turn their faces away from the consequences of abolishing Obamacare. It's astonishing. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Richard Wolf looks at Trumponomics. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, deep background on the so-called hacking of the U.S. election, undocumented immigrants braced for the new administration, and living in a nuclear world with Trump's finger on the button. At 11 on stage and studio, D.M.A. Roberts brings you the 9th Annual Fertile Grounds Festival of New Works, featuring over 100 new performances around Portland. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Andre Middleton asks, how do we train a political body? A look at the Cooper Albright Workshop. All that and more coming up today on your community-supported radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM. All right. This is, as I mentioned, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. We're going through a post that's made its way around social media over the past week. It's entitled The Federal Week in Review, and it goes on to present a laundry list of things that Trump and the congressional Republicans have done to entrench themselves in power. Now, as I mentioned, this is an unattributed list of things, no sources whatsoever, and it had the odor to me of fake news. So I thought that this would be an instructive opportunity for us as progressives to look at information that is making its way around the internet, and we could talk about the importance of checking facts and sourcing articles and evaluating objectively the information that we are presented with. So far, of the 8 items presented on this list, the first 4 have been true. So moving on, number 5. Trump continues to throw the intelligence community under the bus to protect Putin, despite the growing mountain of evidence that the Russians deliberately interfered in our election. Now, in terms of this list, this was sort of a no-brainer. Yes, if you read any of the president-elect's posts on Twitter, you can see him throwing the intelligence community under the bus, and you can see him praising his best friend and dictator, Vladimir Putin, the president in perpetuity of the Russian Federation. So item number 5 is true. Let's go to the phones. Carolyn, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, God, so outrageous, just absolutely outrageous. I don't know, like, well, yesterday, Vice President Joe Biden had said, well, you know, it's over, pretty much, put on your big boy pants, and this is reality, it's happening, we need to have a smooth transition. Fine, but how can we hold these criminals to accountability? Oh, my original question, the reason I called regarding the second point that you had mentioned, mm-hmm. I forget what the rule name was.
The Holman rule.
Reducing some, yes, mm-hmm. somebody reducing somebody's salary to a dollar, which is essentially firing them. So, I mean, if that were to happen, I'm sure that they instated that rule with a particular end and means, meaning that they might have somebody in their eyesight to implement that already, or it wouldn't have occurred to them.
Agreed.
So if this happens to somebody, for example, like if you lose your job or if you're fired, you can go off and apply for unemployment insurance maybe for 6 months while you look for another job. But that your unemployment benefit is based on what your salary was. So if your salary is reduced to a dollar, does that essentially wipe out or eliminate your ability to have maybe some unemployment benefits available to you at the same time? Or that's one question.
That's a very I think you're probably right. Yeah, let's game that one through. Okay, so you have a job, your salary is reduced to a dollar. You're forced to quit that job to find another one, and probably because you quit rather than being fired or laid off, you're not eligible to collect unemployment.
And if you were, it would be you'd probably have 20 cents a year or something like that.
Right.
You get 80% of your salary. So, right? Isn't that outrageous? I mean, and just so you're on the welfare line, but you know what I mean? It's just, it's so outrageous.
It is.
And with the ACA, I think a lot of those people have, for example, the insurance and securities industry is huge in Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
So probably a lot of people, maybe not the congressperson themselves, but certainly their father-in-law, their wife, their son, you know, somebody has a lot of really good stocks and insurance and securities industries. And so maybe they might say, well, it's going to cost us $35 billion in damages to appeal the ACA. But personally, we are going to gain $10 million in profits. So, I mean, if you look at the overall loss versus the gains, it's awful for the American population. But for ourselves, it's absolutely fabulous. So why don't we just go ahead and keep it under the radar what the actual damages are, because it's really beneficial to us. And I think it's just disgusting. I think we need to have a coup or something, you know, put Bernie Sanders in there. So anyway, it's my thought. So,
I know. We're not going to entertain discussions of a coup on this program today.
I know, right? I know. But if we're talking about domestic threats, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, we should give them a chance. But, I mean, if a year goes by and they're just doing stuff like that and they're just flagrantly eliminating laws that are hurting the majority of the people of our country, I mean, what do we do about that, you know?
That's a very good question. And I think the answer, as unsatisfying as this might be, is that we make them pay at the ballot box next time around.
Right, and how effective is that anyways because of the gerrymandering?
Because of the gerrymandering, I know. It gets more and more depressing, doesn't it?
Yes, it sure does. I mean, we're fortunate to live in the West Coast. I mean, Washington, Oregon, California are traditionally blue, and the districts are set up in such a way that it's more fair, I mean, than maybe perhaps in some of the southern and traditional Republican states. But,
oh, definitely.
I mean,
definitely.
Carolina, but...
Yeah, I would say, you know, if you're a citizen interested in, you know, getting a good education, having decent public services, and living in a relatively sane place in terms of environmental and workforce regulation, I would say Cascadia is a better place to be than the old Confederacy, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. So maybe a lot of people are going to be moving here too, which might, you know, hurt our housing market even more, but... that's another thing. We need caps on our house, on our apartment housing. That's off the topic, and I'll get off the phone real quick. But, you know, I mean, raising $15 minimum wage is fabulous, but it's beneficial to the public for only maybe 6 months, because your apartment landlord, the property management says, hey, these people applying to rent these apartments are making more money, so why don't we increase the rate because the market bears it? So you're essentially within 6 months, you transition to 70% or 65% of your monthly pay goes to rent, making $12 an hour. And then in 6 months, 70% of your wage at $15 an hour goes to paying rent. And so it's just absolutely disgusting. And it burdens the rest of our entire society, because that mom and pop shop down the street who can barely afford to keep their business open is being forced to pay a $15 minimum wage, which doesn't actually really give any real benefit to their employee anyways, because their rent keeps going up based on what people are able to pay for rent. So mm-hmm. I think apartment housing needs to have a cap on it. Not, that's just a value-based investment in the real estate market. That wouldn't apply to home ownership. That wouldn't apply to commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't apply to townhouses or condos or anything else. Just that one particular aspect of our market needs to be regularized, because it hurts everybody else to protect one small sliver of individuals. So,
I agree. And I think that's a topic that deserves some further attention down the line. Listen, thank you for the call. Really appreciate it. All right. We are working our way through the list of items presented on this post that you may not have encountered in your social media wanderings over the last week. So far, every item has been true. Next, Trump, number six. Trump breaks a central campaign promise to make Mexico pay for the wall by asking Congress, in other words, we the taxpayers, to pay for it. Well, this is another one of these self-evident items. Yes, of course, this is true. In fact, if you have been paying attention at all, and if you are in possession of a functioning human brain, you could have at any point since the time Trump first announced that Mexico was going to pay for this wall, that it wasn't going to happen. And if you weren't able to reach that conclusion on your own, you might have reached it after hearing the Mexican president say explicitly that they are not going to pay for the wall. So that was a central promise of Trump's campaign that he has broken before even taking office. Now, he says and has tweeted to this effect that we're going to pony up the money here in the United States to build the wall, and then Mexico is going to reimburse us. Let me be the first to tell you that that is a lie. Mexico is never going to pay for this wall. And it's possible that this wall will never be built. Let's hope it never is. Item number six is true. Item number seven, Trump threatens Toyota over a new plant that was never coming to the United States, nor will take jobs out of the United States. This also is true. Trump came out with a tweet criticizing, he got it wrong, as it turns out, criticizing Toyota's position, intent to open a new manufacturing plant in Mexico to sell small passenger cars to the U.S. market. He claimed it was going to be built in Baja California, when in fact the plant in Baja California already exists. This new plant was planned to be built many hundreds of miles away in a different part of Mexico. And Toyota has since put the brakes on that plant. And they're saying that they're going to defer action regarding new automobile manufacturing capacity until it becomes clear what the Trump administration's policy is. Now, I suppose if you're running Toyota Motor Corporation, that's probably a pretty prudent decision. You might not want to build a new multi-billion-dollar manufacturing plant if President Trump's import policies are going to affect you in an adverse way. Now, I'm making these claims, of course, absent any moral judgment on whether it is morally acceptable for a corporation like Toyota to build a plant someplace like Mexico, where they're able to pay a wage that is substantially below that which they would pay either in Japan or in the United States. Tabling that question for the moment, merely pointing out that Toyota has, in fact, altered its trajectory based upon the tweetings of the president-elect. So this means that our list now, out of the seven items we've reviewed, seven are true. Let's go to the phones. Paul, good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for doing this. I think it's a really good example of how we need to treat news now. Got to go through all of it with the hard work.
It might be a better example if some of these were false, but
well,
they're all turning out to be true.
I'll help you with that because the first one on the ambassadors, it's important to recognize this is misleading to the point of really probably better being called false. So the way this works is about one-fourth of the ambassadorships mm-hmm. are political. That means that they yep. are appointed by the president. The other three-fourths, or almost three-fourths, are career diplomats. What Trump has said is going to apply only to the political ones. And it's normal for right. a president to, in fact, it's always that all of these political ambassadors submit their resignations as soon as a new president is inaugurated. So I think the wording is a little tricky, but the great majority of the ambassadorships are not on the block. These are career diplomats. And where this will really matter is places like Russia, where you would assume that Trump would really want to get his own person in.
Agreed.
Well, Russia is a career diplomat position, so there will be a fight. Right now, there's a John Teft, who's an older guy, and he may retire. Maybe Trump will get his own pick. But that is a career diplomat position. So the statement made in your first item doesn't apply to most ambassadorships. People can check this just by way of source. The American Foreign Service Association is the union for foreign service officers. Diplomats are unionized, believe it or not.
Well, that's good. That's a good thing.
And
this whole thing seemed to me to smack.
All of these people are, and whether they're political or career appointees. Sorry, go ahead.
This whole thing seemed to smack more of spite from Trump more than anything.
Well, I think also there's a clear explanation for it. Traditionally, presidents use these political appointments to reward major donors, and Obama did the same thing. In fact, he pushed the envelope and got a few more political appointees. Mm-hmm. in the ambassadorships than Bush had previously. So Obama moved it along, you know, just like with the drone strikes, another thing where
indeed
a president that some people might like push things, and now we're going to see what happens. But it makes sense for Trump to really want these positions because it is going to be the most corrupt administration since the early 18th century.
If not ever.
These are the spoils that you can give to friends.
Exactly.
You know, this is where you reward people. And where you set up the deal-making infrastructure for building hotels in wherever or whatever.
Exactly.
So it's a good story. It's an important thing to get out, but it really should probably be clarified that we're only talking about around a quarter of the ambassadorship.
Well, that was that's very helpful. I'm glad you clarified that for us. Thank you, and I really appreciate the call. Our callers are so awesome. Look at that. Look at that command of the facts. All right, so this brings us to the last item in our list of eight, number eight. And this one, I mentioned earlier, the rules package about forbidding the CBO from tracking Obamacare costs. That made me really sit up and pay attention. The same could be said of this item, number eight, the last on the list. House passes the Reins Act, as in grab the reins of your horse, giving them veto power over any rules enacted by any federal agency or department. For example, if the FDA or EPA bans a drug or pesticide, Congress can overrule it based on lobbyists, not science. Now, this is the language of the post that I'm reading to you right now. If you don't like that endangered species designation, Congress kills it. Now, this, again, made me sit up and think that I'm reading a piece of fake news here. Because let's think about this. That's a dramatic shift in the balance of power between the legislative and executive branches. Any president in normal times or any president in his or her right mind would probably smack this down with a veto because regulations are set by the various federal departments. Here's how it works. A piece of legislation is passed, for example, regulating that auto manufacturers have to improve their overall gas mileage across their fleet. Let's just say. The Federal Department of Transportation then crafts the regulations that describe how this is going to happen, how soon it's going to happen, what the specific rules are, and on and on and on. It also sets up things like an inspection regime and a schedule for oversight. It puts into place the mechanisms to ensure that the auto industry actually complies with this new set of regulations. That's how it all works. But what this act would do, the regulations from the Executive in Need of Scrutiny Act of 2017, the Reins Act, in an act of acronymical acrobatics would strip the executive branch of this power, essentially. So let's say that some representative from Detroit, who's in cozy with the auto industry, doesn't like this regulation, thinks it's too onerous, thinks it's going to be too difficult for Ford and GM and Chrysler to produce more fuel-efficient cars. So all it would take is a vote from Congress to overturn this. So I thought, there's no way this is going to happen. What president who has a care for his or her political power is going to let this happen? But as you might guess, these are not normal times. This is not a normal president-elect. And the RAINS Act was, in fact, passed by the Republican Congress during their recent rulemaking session. This is actually a thing. Item number 8 on our list is actually true. So what does this mean now? What are the implications of all of these things that we've discussed this morning that were passed as part of the House Republican Caucus's rules package? Well, they were passed by the caucus. There weren't any Democrats allowed to give any input. So when Congress has gaveled into session, this rules package that has already been passed by the majority party will be brought before the entirety of the House of Representatives to be voted on. It will presumably pass in a party line vote, since Republicans have already supported it. And then these things will come into being. And this will be how the House governs itself. This will be the rules that they follow. This actually means that the House of Representatives can, through a majority vote, undo any item of regulation for any department of the federal government, for any industry they want to, with simply a majority vote. Now, I want you to think about that for a second, because that's absolutely breathtaking in its scope. And as I mentioned, any normal circumstances with any normal president-elect, this would never be possible, because what president in his or her right mind would let this happen? Donald Trump would. It's unclear yet as to whether he would allow this to go fast without a veto. I suspect that he will. I suspect the reason that it has appeared as part of the House Republicans' rules package is because there's an understanding that there will be no presidential veto on this particular item. So this means that your government will no longer be able to regulate industry to protect you, to protect the environment you live in, to make your workplace safe, to make your vehicles fuel efficient, and on and on and on and on. The implications of this are frankly staggering. And that brings us to the end of our list. Everything on it was true. Like we said to a previous caller, perhaps this exercise would have been more instructive had this turned out to actually be a piece of fake news. But it was all true. And what does that mean? If you sum up items 1 through 8, you consider the fact that they are all going to pass. What does this mean for the function of our republic as we have come to understand it? Things are different, folks. These are different times. This is a different president-elect. This is naked, unmasked, avaricious capitalism in pretty close to its purely distilled form. It is going to take every ounce of our effort as progressives to push back against this every step of the way. Everything we talked about today, or at least a great deal of it, is going to go into effect before Congress is even in session, before the president-elect even takes his office. That's how important it is that we pay attention. That's how important it is that we as progressives, when we're confronted with a piece of information like the list I just ran through today, that we take the time to fact-check every item. It is our responsibility as thinking citizens to not pass on inaccurate information. It is our responsibility to make sure that our contribution to the discourse is based on truth. Our republic depends on it. The future of our children and our grandchildren depends on it. It is our responsibility to bring the truth to this fight. And that's what we're going to continue to do on this program. That's what the other talk radio programs on this station are going to continue to do. That's why we bring you Amy Goodman every morning. Now, we're running out of time. Unfortunately, I'd hope to get to some more phone calls about this, but I'm glad we made it through our list. Pay attention, everybody. Check your facts, everybody. Don't pass on unsourced information. If you come across something that doesn't have a source, find the source. And if it turns out what you're passing on is true, include that source the next time you pass it on. It may seem like a small thing. It may seem like a little too much extra effort, but it's worth it. It's our responsibility as the people with the brains in this ongoing discussion. So that's all for today. I really appreciate everybody's contributions. I'm glad that you indulged me the time to engage in this particular exercise. And this won't be the last time the notion of fake news comes to the fore on this program. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. Joe Uris will presumably be back with us next week. In the meantime, keep on keeping on.
In the air, from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. The war.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of Maggots and Men, Sunday, January 15th at 4:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Maggots and Men is an experimental film set in post-revolutionary Russia, and it tells the story of the 1921 uprising of the Kronstadt sailors with a subtext of gender anarchy. This film is a benefit for Out There Adventures, whose mission is to cultivate leadership and build community for queer youth through adventure. Again, that's Maggots and Men, Sunday, January 15th, 4:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Louisiana officials are taking